We have a caller on hold. Yes, we are taking calls. Who's on hold? Chris, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Terry, how are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Very good.
Sorry, Chris Delaney.
Oh, Chris Delaney. Oh, you're on hold. Okay, sorry. Can you hold for a minute? I haven't introduced you.
No problem.
Okay, I thought that we had a note here that said a caller on hold. Am I taking calls? I thought you wanted to comment on our last subject. I think you'll want to comment on our coming up subject, which we'll get into.
He'd probably want to comment on this one, too. I'm sure Chris Delaney would have a few thoughts on this.
We're not going to let him get going on there. We might not let him stop.
Okay. Well, you have to restrain
yourself.
You don't
take on so much anyway.
Okay. So we are joined now online on telephone. From where, Chris? Where are you?
I'm actually back in Vancouver now. Okay. We were on the road, Bill and I, for the last week going through the interior of the province.
Okay.
And we had one last meeting in Cranbrook tonight, but I wasn't available to do that. I had to come back.
It is Chris Delaney from the anti-HST
the
movement.
The great warrior of
the
British
warrior,
Columbia.
The great anti-HST warrior. And Chris, I'm going to start this interview, and thank you for joining us tonight. I'm going to start this interview off provocatively by asserting that on two of the very major points, the points of opposition that you and Bill Van Der Zandt have so relentlessly driven home over the last many months, that the provincial government has now essentially said you were right, that is taking steps to change that. They have promised to cut the GST, the HST, from 12% down to 10% over the next couple of years, and they are also shifting some more taxes back into the corporate sector. They've acknowledged that they made big mistakes in rolling this out, in explaining it, and that they are taking steps to correct it. After all of this, should not British Columbians now say, okay, now we've made our point? To turn back the clock now, to go back to PST, GST would be costly. It would not be good for the economics of the province, according to most economists. Therefore, we should vote to keep the HST. Now, should not British Columbians be thinking that?
No, they shouldn't. But I guess let me say this. Find me an economist anywhere in the world that believes in a tax system where the government takes too much of your money, overtaxes you, and gives you rebate checks back and calls that a proper tax system.
Well, I thought it was just a $175 bribe back.
Well, they began with $230 to low-income people, which was there from the beginning. Now it's a $175 bribe for seniors one time. So you get to pay it for the rest of your life, but for the 1 year, you'll get a little bit of an offset that won't quite match what you have to pay that year. But I guess what I'm trying to make the point is that they've basically admitted, as you said, that the tax doesn't work. It doesn't lower prices. It doesn't increase employment. It doesn't stimulate the economy. So rather than scrap it and go back to what worked before, they're trying to sort of put a body cast on this thing and get us all to, you know, wheel it along and say this is better.
But have they said that will be the case for all time, that it won't stimulate the economy, that it's not working? Are they saying that's the initial response, is that the shift? I thought they were still saying long term this is good for the economy.
Well, no, they're not saying that. They're now saying that.
They're
when
now
they
saying
began,
that. Exactly. So that,
yeah,
I wanted to get that clear.
Yeah.
Sorry, they used to say that right away this was going to be good. Right away it wasn't going to hurt
but
anybody.
They were wrong on that.
They
term.
Were wrong on that.
Well, not only wrong. Saying, I mean, they didn't say right away it wouldn't hurt. They actually said it was the single. They didn't just say it was a good tax. Remember, they said it was the single best thing they could do to stimulate the economy.
Right.
Of
okay.
British Columbia.
That's all wrong. And,
right.
And that's all wrong. We know that's
so
wrong.
So now they've admitted that, and now they're saying long term.
Yes.
It will eventually work out. Well,
isn't that a hypothetical?
Well,
I mean,
no, it's not. It's not hypothetical. We actually have the HST has been around a long, long time. One of the things they like everybody to believe is that it's this new progressive tax. It's been around since 1954 in France. It's called the value-added tax. It's the same thing in HST. So it's been around, I guess, 5 years newer than our PST, which came in 1948 or 49. So it's not that new. So we've had it for a long time, and we get to judge it over a long period of time. So how's it performed? Well, Europe is collapsing before our very eyes. Now, maybe you can't blame that on the value-added tax completely, but you can say that it certainly hasn't saved Europe or stimulated its economy or brought its unemployment down. We're seeing Greece default. Ireland has defaulted. Italy, Spain, Portugal are ready to default. France and Ireland are saying...
Okay, so let me stop you here because, you know, I'm no economist, and you know that, Crystal.
Wait a minute, because unbeknownst to you, in our studio audience, we have a studio audience tonight, Chris, is an accountant, and I'm looking at him for any kind of read, and he's not giving me any.
You are linking the collapsing economies of Ireland, Portugal, Greece, and Spain, the pigs, Iceland, Ireland as well, to the VAT.
No, I'm not.
I'm not
linking it directly to the VAT. I'm linking it to excessive taxation, which has driven the economy underground,
right.
One portion of which is the VAT.
Okay.
And so it's created a situation whereby governments are collecting less and less revenues now to the point where they're having to borrow against spending to the point now where they've gone bankrupt. So that is the VAT is definitely a contributor to that.
Okay.
So it has not stimulated the economies. It has not raised employment. It has not made it better. It's made it worse. That's my point.
Well, do we know that the VAT was the contributing factor to make it worse, or were there other things? I mean, we'll give you some specific examples.
Okay. So in France, they have a 19.5% VAT. The restaurant
industry. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, the restaurant industry, well, it's 21% across Europe on average. Some places it's 25%. It started off at about 6 or 7, and over the past 40 or 50 years, it's eventually gone up to 21. In France, it's 19.5%, and for 8 years, they lobbied the EU to reduce it on restaurant meals. They wanted to reduce it because restaurants said no one's coming, and when they do, they want to pay off invoice. They don't want to pay the value-added tax. It's too much for a restaurant meal. So it was killing them. That's a huge part of their economy because it's a huge part of tourism. So it took them 8 years to go through the EU and finally get an exemption. But prior to that, what was happening was people were cheating so much at the restaurant level, they were stationing gendarmes outside of restaurants to check invoices from people. And, of course, that made it even worse. People just stopped going to the restaurants altogether. So, yeah, that's a specific example of how the value-added tax actually hurt the economy there.
Okay. There's a value-added tax of almost 20%. Now, wouldn't a GST of 12% and a provincial sales tax of 8% have the same impact if that were the case? I mean, this was just high taxes generally. And we're looking now at a combined PST-GST into the new HST of just 10%. Most of the things that people used to buy used to have to pay GST and PST that equal 12%. Now you'll be paying in a couple of years 2 points less.
Really?
Is that not correct?
Well, yeah, but if you add that 10% to hundreds of more items and services, all services which didn't have PST before,
like your restaurant,
you're going to get hit for billions of dollars. So you're making it sound like it's less money for everybody.
No, I'm saying is that on most things, there's hundreds of new things, but there's tens of thousands of things that we used to pay both on, right?
There's not tens of thousands. Yeah. There's thousands of goods that we used to pay PST and GST on, and now we'll pay HST.
Go to any Zellers, and you'll see tens of thousands of things.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, they all come within the categories.
The categories.
Roughly about 1,000 categories of goods. Yeah. But the point is this. It's a little sleight of hand by the government trying to make it sound like you're voting between a 10% tax and a 12% tax. But everybody knows that the 10% is now applied to everything, where the 12% was only applied to goods.
Right.
So what it means is that even if you go to 10%, you'd actually have to go to 8% to get it down to what consumers used to pay under PST, the PST system.
Very important point.
Yeah, so you're still collecting 2% more, which means about $1.5 billion to about $1.8 billion more from consumers every year in British Columbia under a 10% HST.
Yeah.
Why would anyone vote for it?
Okay,
Chris, you've been out on the road. What's happening out there in Points Yonder?
Well, what's happening out there is reality. So it's been a lot of fun because every meeting we've gone to, we're getting about roughly 100 people. Some, I think Kelowna last night was about 200. And Dawson Creek was about 60. But in and around 100 in each meeting. And I would say it's been roughly about 80-20 on our side in terms of getting rid of the HST. And when you consider that the Liberals have constituency associations all over the province, and you know they're phoning their people to try to get them out, and all they can get is 20% of the crowd out, when we have nobody, we just show up and hope that somebody's there that's sympathetic to our message. And the people are extremely upset. And what's really interesting, what surprised Bill and I, was that seniors and working families and mothers and those kind of people are the ones showing up, and they're the ones that are getting the rebates. So we thought we'd lose some of them. We thought some of them would say, well, I'm getting a rebate, it's not so bad. And they're the ones that are hurt the most. So that was kind of interesting to us. We thought this Hail Mary pass by Christy Clark to save this tax would somehow wear off on these people, but they're the ones most affected, and they're showing up at these meetings and they're saying, no, we don't want it.
How much is this Hail Mary costing me? Because, you know, and I'm supposing you guys are getting equal amounts to get your message out from the government, aren't you?
Well, originally Christy Clark said we'll have a full debate, we'll fund both sides equally so that no one side has an advantage over the other, and we'll have a good equal debate. Well, that lasted about 10 minutes because they gave us $250,000. They gave the Smart Tax Alliance, which is the official opponent against us, $250,000. And then they said, but we'll put no limits on government and no limits on either side, knowing that the big business lobby has millions of dollars available to them, and the government gave themselves $5 million for their stick man campaign.
Wait a minute. How many?
$5 million for the Stickman campaign, and we expect they'll probably spend another $5 million by the time they're done. And the Smart Tax Alliance has already spent, obviously, tens, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions on their ads, and by the time they're done, they'll be into the millions. So we expect to be outspent about 50 to 1, perhaps 100 to 1 by the time they're done. So that was equal funding, according to Christy Clark.
So the latest polls that I read a couple of days ago have persuaded some British Columbians to now support the government side, that seems to be rather kind of 50-50 out there with still some undecided about how the vote's going to go. Do you see any movement? Have you noticed any movement like that away from your side and towards the government?
I read the Ipsos Reid poll that they quoted, showing it at 50-50, and they had a caveat at the end of the poll, and it said, we can't guarantee the veracity of these numbers because we're not entirely sure which side will be most motivated to get their vote out. Now, I've never seen a major polling company put a caveat like that in a poll. They didn't say in the last election, we're not sure whether Jack Layton will win seats in Quebec or not, because it'll depend on how motivated his people are to go and vote.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's bogus. Well, it's a completely bogus poll. And the question that was asked, normally what they'll do is they'll say, and they'll introduce a subject and then they'll ask how you would vote on it. But in this particular case, they just asked you what you thought of the 10% versus the 12%, and they didn't explain that it's applied to many, many more goods. So the fact that it was sort of 50-50 made me say, holy mackerel, because if they had phoned me and asked me the question, would you prefer a 10% tax or a 12% tax,
yes,
which is essentially how they asked it,
right,
I would have said yes.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
So the fact they could only get 50-50 told us. And then what happened was really interesting. The same day that poll came out, we were in Kamloops, and Nancy Green, who's one of the owners of Sun Peaks up there, the famous Nancy Green, the skier,
yes,
yep,
was at the meeting, and she came up to Mr. Vanderzem at the end of the meeting and started to yell at him and scream at him and began swearing. It was actually quite disconcerting. It was all picked up on the TV cameras and on the radio by the radio reporters there.
Really?
She was so upset that he had taken on this task and fighting for the people. And I, at one point, I sort of interjected and I said, look, you're going to have a referendum. You get to get people to try to vote your way. We're going to try and get them to vote our way. And at the end of the day, it'll be what it is. I said, does it get any better than that? And she looked at me and I said, or would you prefer to just have your way without any vote at all? And she walked away.
Well, it should be noted here that this is not just Nancy Green reign the Olympic gold medalist, not just Nancy Green reign the World Cup of Skiing winner, not just Nancy Green reign the ski hill developer, but Senator Nancy Green reign.
We got to pay for the privilege of having her swear at us. But, but in any case, what was interesting about it, what I said to Bill was interesting about it was, I said, Bill, when you're winning, I mean, if that poll was real, you don't freak out like that. You don't get that upset if you're winning. I said, that's a pretty good sign that they're not winning.
So this is interesting because she's a federal conservative appointee, mm-hmm, and would obviously be wanting to protect the federal conservative position here. And it must mean that, and we're trying to sort of read the tea leaves here,
yeah,
that she's seeing that a rejection of the HST in the upcoming referendum, and I want to talk more about the mechanics of the referendum in a minute, she must see that if the province, the voters in British Columbia reject that, that is not going to only cause problems for the provincial government, but that will cause a significant political problem for the federal conservative government as well. And I'd like you to comment on that. What sort of problems would Ottawa be in?
Well, that's a very good point, Terry. And so far, you know, Ottawa has pretty much stayed out of the fray on this, and largely because the Prime Minister and the various caucus members here in British Columbia have said, we will respect whatever decision British Columbians make. And the Supreme Court of British Columbia has said it is a decision for British Columbians that the BC government signed the agreement with Ottawa to create the HST, and it can get out of it. So all of the responsibility ultimately rests with the province to make the decision whether to have it or not, and Ottawa has always taken that position. So long as they do, then I think they won't wear this. If they turn around and say afterwards, well, no, we're going to force you to keep it, well, then they could have some problems. But in the case of Nancy Green, what was really extraordinary to us is Sun Peaks is really struggling right now. I mean, it's not doing well.
Well, that would be sort of you think that she'd be reevaluating the whole situation.
Yeah, well, this is why I think she was so upset, was because I think she's quite conflicted. I think on the one hand, ideologically, she sort of accepts or buys into the Liberal line, and she doesn't like the NDP and so forth, and there's a lot of that coming into it. But then on the other hand, I think deep down inside, she knows it's not helping her ski resort, and probably getting rid of the HST would probably be a benefit to her, but she wasn't really having any of it the other day.
Well, you know, Chris, this is an interesting discussion in my household because, as you know, my kids are all young families now, starting out with their own houses and, you know, doing life, getting married, all those kinds of things. And this is a huge issue for them. This is an expenditure that they see is hurting them.
Well, and you're right, and they have to live with it for the next 60 years of their working lives. So this is what we tell young people is, look, you got to pay it your whole life. And for the average British Columbian, and even the independent panel has confirmed this, it's going to cost an average of about $400 for every man, woman, and child. So if you're in that average range that you're going to pay in HST about $400 a year.
That's at 12%, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so what is it going to cost the average British Columbian at 10%?
10%, probably about $300. So if you're in that $300 to $400 average range, and you take paying it over a lifetime of 60 years, you're going to end up paying about $20,000 to $25,000 in HST in a 60-year period of time. You'd have to earn $40,000 to be able to pay that, because that's after-tax income that you have to pay the HST with. So basically, you'd be working 1 year of your entire life for the next 60 years. One of those years would be dedicated solely to paying the HST.
Now, there are some people, mainly from the left or the progressive side, that generally support taxes as being good because they redistribute income, they provide for social services and health care and education and things like this. And they would say, well, if you're not, and this is not me because I'm not a supporter of wealth redistribution. But they would say that, listen, if you're not paying this through the HST, you'll be paying it some way else, because government has these programs that you aren't willing to give up that have to be funded, so how are we going to fund these? So you might as well do it through this way that businesses like, because this will at least grow the economy is what
of course it doesn't grow the economy, it hurts the economy.
Well, I know we've dealt with that before.
But here's the answer to the issue of liking taxes or not.
Yeah.
So the HST, in fact the PST as well, are regressive taxes, because irrespective of whether you're paying a PST just on goods or an HST on everything, you're paying it on consumption. And so what that means is that a person of lower or modest means must pay a greater proportion of their salary to acquire the same goods and services to live every day as a wealthier person. So in that sense, all sales taxes are regressive. The HST is particularly regressive because it applies to everything, including services. Alberta has no sales tax at all, provincially, and so you basically have greater consumption and greater consumer spending going on there, which actually drives productivity and drives demand. So I guess if you were going to move to a better system, what you'd want to do is a more progressive system where you deal with taxation through incomes and possibly through resource revenues and corporate income taxes, that kind of thing. So the other problem, too, with an HST is that under the PST, corporations in British Columbia that export, and we're basically an export province, we export commodities, that's our biggest revenue drivers, they exported to foreign jurisdictions to consumers in China and Europe and the United States. And those consumers bought our goods, and with the purchases, the corporations paid their PST, meaning really the consumers outside of BC were paying the PST. By creating the HST and giving corporations refunds for that, you're asking the consumers in British Columbia to pay all the sales taxes. So, again, if there is a sales tax that's any good for corporations that actually works, it's a PST system because then you're collecting money from consumers outside of BC.
Chris, I want to raise this point because as I've been traveling around the province and speaking to people, and I want to pick up on a point that Terry raised about this, you know, we try to legitimize this big, deep tax grab because we want all these services. I'm hearing more and more from Canadians that, no, we don't want these services. We don't want, you know, a Ministry of Children and Family that costs billions of dollars to destroy families. You know, we want accountability. We want government to be reeled in and provide the services that we want them, that are our legal taxations. And this is another thing that I keep hearing more often. You know, is this tax legal? People are starting to question this because we've got this tax, that tax, here a tax, there a tax.
Well, you got a tax on tax because you're actually adding HST now on top of the carbon tax on your BC Hydro bill.
Now, there's something that we can definitely agree 100% on is this carbon tax.
Yeah.
I tell you. And that, isn't that being raised again on July 1st?
Yeah, it'll go up again, I think, another half cent or a cent on July 1st.
This is one of the most ridiculous, regressive, hurtful, economically depressive taxes.
Deceptive.
That you can imagine.
Deception.
Right.
And all done in the name of what exactly?
Gaia.
Well,
punishing
nothing. It's just a scam. It's a scam because we know the Earth is getting cooler, not warmer,
yeah.
But that's a whole other subject.
Yeah,
but here's an interesting thing.
For using carbon fuels.
Yeah, here's an interesting thing. I think this is what's coming through at the meetings we've been at, is people see the carbon tax, they see the increase in MSP premiums, they see the increase in ferry rates, they see the increase in hydro rates. There's increases everywhere. Groceries have gone up, gasoline has gone up, prices have all gone up, not down. So the only chance they'll ever have to vote themselves some real tax relief, and for most people it honestly doesn't matter at the end of the day where that tax relief comes from because they're getting hit everywhere they go. The only chance they've got to get some relief is to get rid of this HST and go back to a PST system and get it off of services. So that's one reason why I think people are so frustrated, and we're hearing it at the meetings, is that it's the straw that broke the camel's back. It's just too much.
But, you know, I'm going to make a prediction on this, and I was the resident expert at the last federal election. I'm going to toot my own horn here. I called it exactly as it came down.
Oh, very good.
Mr. O.O. would get in as opposition. Harper would get his majority, and Iggy would be who? You know? And you know what?
Pop.
Did he pop? No, he packed. He packed his family off, didn't he? The family packed.
That's right.
But that boy, whoever gave them that marketing idea of the family pack, you know, just was not, we'll pack you out of here, buddy. You know, and that's exactly what we did.
Well, sort of worked for Christy Clark. You know, I'm thinking about...
Well, you were going to make a prediction,
Gary. Yeah. And I am. And I'm going to say that, you know, to this... HST is going to be ousted because, you know, even if it was, and this is how angry I think that taxpayers are and willing to demonstrate some kind of revolt, even if you could convince people that this was a good tax, even if you could, and I don't think there's an argument that is really pushing that with any credibility. But let's just be generous here and say, let's say that, you know, this is all working, the economy is being stimulated, all these other things. People are going to vote against this thing because they want to send a clear message. They are angry, and this is their way of spanking the government.
Right.
You're right, but it goes even deeper than that because, and this has also been a point that has come up at the meetings that seems to have resonated, and that is we've said to people, if you didn't vote to get rid of the tax, if you actually voted in favor of the government and supported them, the message you would be sending to them and to every government that came after is that you can use any means to betray the public, to deceive them, to lie at an election time, and all they have to do is wait us out, and they'll get their way.
And send us $100.
Yeah. But just wait us out, wear us down, and eventually they'll get their way. That would be a terrible message to send to government. So this is a unique opportunity in the history of the country where the people are going to get, first of all, the final say on a major policy, and they're going to get a say on a major policy in between elections, so they don't have to wait until all the damage is done 4 years later and it's too late to change it.
It's very interesting how British Columbia has embraced, to a very small degree, but quite historically, referendums. And I can remember British Columbia's epochal rejection of the Charlottetown Accord, and it led the nation in its opposition to that. And then, following that, all across the country, when the Charlottetown Accord was defeated, government after government that had supported the Charlottetown Accord was spanked and sent to their room with no dessert.
Well, yeah, and you can thank BC, actually, for defeating the Charlottetown Accord,
yes,
because British Columbia had referendum legislation here that said any constitutional change must be voted on by the people. And that came about after the failure of Meech Lake. And it was actually Bill VanderZam,
yes,
who brought it in,
yeah,
and said, never again will we decide just as a caucus or as a cabinet what will happen. We'll go to the people. So Brian Mulroney, when he tried his second kick at the can on Charlottetown, said, we could get all other 9 provinces, it'll still fail because we need all 10, and BC has referendum legislation, it's going to go down there. So we'll have a national referendum to try to isolate BC and defeat them.
Right.
And that's why we got the national referendum, was because BC,
yeah,
had the, yeah, legislation here, and that was Bill.
Pretty significant. Can you walk us through what the mechanics of the upcoming referendum here in British Columbia will be?
Right.
How is that going to work? For British Columbians listening who might not know, and to maybe inspire or perspire the rest of Canadians as well.
Who are listening in, yeah.
Teach
so
me
what's
how- going
to happen is it'll be a mail-in ballot. Will come from Elections BC. It will be mailed out to every registered voter in BC, which is about 3 million people. And the ballots will start arriving on June the 13th, and they'll arrive within a few days of that everywhere. And then people will have until July 22nd to mail it in. And in every ballot, you will receive your ballot, and you will receive a second envelope that you can put the ballot in to return it. That envelope will be postage paid by Victoria, so you don't have to put a stamp on it. And it will be a secret envelope so that when you put your ballot back in, they have no way of tracing it to you from the original envelope that they sent. So the second envelope is an anonymous envelope to send it back in so that you have a truly secret ballot vote. And the question that will be on there will be, do you wish to extinguish the HST and reinstate, and this is the key word, and reinstate the GST in conjunction with the PST? And the word reinstate has been confirmed to mean, by the chief electoral officer who wrote the question, to restore to the former position. So it means the PST with the same exemptions as before we brought in the HST.
Right. Okay. And you have any problems with that question or that those procedures?
It's a little bit of a difficult question in the sense that you have to vote yes to get rid of the tax and no to keep it. So that's a little awkward for people.
Well, actually, traditionally, people like to vote yes to something. So
yeah, that in would, that sense, it's a positive.
Yeah, it's a
decision,
positive,
yeah,
step to get rid of it. So
yeah,
I
and
think
the question
that
is
you
quite
like
clear,
that.
But for some people, they've been saying no to the tax for so long that in their minds, it's a no decision. So we're going to have a lawn sign campaign, which is actually just getting underway now, uh-huh, across the province, that will have great big signs that say vote yes to extinguish the HST, so people
vote
know.
Vote yes for a brighter future.
To get rid of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, at these meetings then, Chris, are you taking advantage of the people that are coming out to...
Oh, in what way?
to take your message and spread it forth and all the rest of it. What is the main thrust of these meetings?
Well, one of the good things about smaller communities is that people do talk, and so you have an opportunity to have a huge impact when you go into these smaller communities, because the people will go away and they'll talk in the coffee shops and the word will get out. So yeah, we're using that to our advantage in that we're getting the message out that they have to vote yes to extinguish the tax, and of course we're giving them the arguments why. So in a place like Vancouver, it'll be a little tougher. You've got big population center here, and in the case of a referendum where it's a simple majority, you want to mine as many votes as you can, so the Lower Mainland's important. important, but it's much harder to get a critical mass of awareness here. So we'll probably focus a lot of our radio ad campaign down here, and we'll do a little more of the grassroots stuff with the signs and the brochures and the meetings in the smaller communities.
Are the people who are heading these different groups, on your side, you were involved in, are you getting paid for this, or is this a volunteer thing?
No, all of us, there's no money to be paid, so it's been volunteer. We've been on it for 2 years.
Yes, okay. Yeah. I thought maybe at this stage of the money that's coming from the government that you're allowed to get a stipend.
Yeah, no, I don't know that you'd get a stipend. There could be some administrative fees, so, you know, somebody might get paid a little bit of money to run the website and that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But no, nobody's getting a salary or anything.
Okay, interesting to know. So what's next in your campaign? Are all the meetings wrapped up, or there's still many?
No, the meetings will go on for another couple of weeks just before, I think, the end on the 12th, the 11th or 12th, just before the vote. So we'll come back this week and we'll do Surrey, Abbotsford, and Vancouver on Saturday. And then we'll go over to Vancouver Island. We'll do Victoria and Nanaimo. And then what Bill and I have been doing is, in between the government, the official government-sponsored meetings, we've been packing in our own meetings. So on this last leg, we did one in Fort St. John and one in Vernon and Penticton just on our own. And interestingly, we got to the first couple of meetings that the government sponsored, we got about 60 or 70 people in Dawson Creek, Prince George, and Kamloops. And then Fort St. John, Penticton, and Vernon, Fort St. John, we got about 100 people, and Penticton and Vernon, we got about 120 and then 140.
Wow.
In our meetings, we spent $500 advertising. The government spent $50,000 advertising theirs. So,
wow.
So that told us something else again, which is that there's a big majority of people that actually have, in a way, made up their mind already, and they just wanted clarification from us on, you know, what it was they were supposed to say in the ballot and how they were to vote and a couple
right.
of questions.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to go to meetings where they were going to have to listen to somebody from, you know, the business or the government side give them the same stuff they've been hearing about for a long time. There's a lot of frustration there. And we find at the town halls, the no side, the people that want to keep the HST, get a lot of hostility from the audience, and the more they talk and try to defend it, the angrier people
right.
get.
Now, we just got an email from some of our listeners, Bob and Deanna. Where does the public go to find the information that you're talking about? Is there a website? And,
yeah.
and also, thank you for bringing light to this important issue. We are being taxed to death! Exclamation, 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 exclamation.
Well, I think I know Bob and Deanna. They're wonderful people and very committed British Columbians, hardworking people. And we have a website. It's fighthst.com. And a number of the points that we've been defending and trying to bring forward are on that site. We're also, as I say, going to have a radio campaign going starting about June the 10th and running till about the 18th. We just don't have a lot of money, so we're going to focus it right in and around the time that the vote is taking place, and we're just praying and hoping that Canada Post doesn't go on strike and throw everything off.
Yeah, right. Chris, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to take off the anti-HST hat and put on a provincial political hat, because you are certainly one of the most astute observers of provincial political scene in British Columbia, involved in a small political party of your own. In the last half year or so, we have seen three new provincial party leaders of perhaps the three biggest parties, Christy Clark, Mr. Dix, and now John Cummins of the Conservative Party. Can you link the HST campaign and referendum to a looming provincial government, provincial election? Do you think that there is going to be one in the near future, perhaps early fall? And what impact will that the HST uprising have on that election?
Well, I think we can go further than that. We can, I think, say that the HST revolt has led to the election of Christy Clark, Adrian Dix, and John Cummins.
Yes.
None of them would have been in those positions had the people not risen up and gone against this tax, because Gordon Campbell would probably still be governing the province. So
I agree.
Christy Clark owes her job directly to the Fight HST, so one day that may occur to her, and she might just vote against it herself secretly when she gets her ballot.
Well, you know what? I still want to find out whether or not she gave herself and her son the H1N1, because she went on that little campaign of calling everyone who didn't get their shot bad Canadians.
You're getting your shots in.
Bad Canadians.
Favorite subject of yours.
What kind of person called people bad Canadians? Okay. And
for not getting a flu
well,
shot.
And then last
Those
I
flu
heard,
shots are very controversial.
Well, you know what? Last time I heard, Chris, it was the last day you could get your free injection, and if I recall the facts correct, she was heading off to Mexico and still hadn't got it. So I suspect that all of us that started raising questions about the experimentation of the drug admitted by the pharmaceuticals.
But well, one thing she did give herself is a rebate from the HST. She has a son under 18, so she'll be getting a rebate for $175 if the tax goes through on top of the $250,000 she already earns as premier. And if you're a single mother with an 18-year-old who's going to college, you won't get any rebate. That's kind of nice.
There you go. Chris, do you think there'll be an election in the early fall?
No, I don't think so, because I think I agree with Kerry. I think they're going to lose the referendum on the HST. Okay. By what margin, I don't know. I won't make a prediction on that because they've got so much money they're going to pour into this. And it's going to go negative, I think. So far, they've been trying to say how terrific the tax is, but as they see themselves failing, I think then pretty soon they're going to switch it into if you get rid of this, the sky's going to fall and the world's going to collapse and BC will just be destroyed. So that could have an impact as well. So we may see that. But at the end of the day, I think they'll lose. And so I think coming off of a major loss like that and Christie wearing the tax and wearing the defeat, which is now happening more and more, it's starting to stick to her and Kevin Falcon as they try to defend it at all costs, will do huge damage to her popularity. It already has. So going into a fall election immediately after that defeat would just, I think, take them right down. So I think she's going to wait and try to recover some of that damage by perhaps negotiating strongly with the federal government to try to get us out of whatever penalties are going to come about from canceling the HST and trying to show British Columbians that she's here for us. If she didn't and she went into a fall election after a defeat like that, I think it would be devastating.
Yeah. Good analysis. Kerry?
Well, no, I agree 100% with you, and besides which, I think she's rather enjoying being premier of this province, so why take a chance any other way?
Well, and why risk the payday for all your friends?
That's right.
But I do think people, you know what, Chris, I think this next provincial election, when it comes about, I think the mood of this province, we're going to see some real interesting fireworks this next time. I think it's going to be a very interesting election. I think there is going to be a whole new constituency of voters out there actively participating in this process for reasons that most politicians have never had to deal with before. And that is because we want sensible government, small government. We don't want to be taxed to death. There is a revolution happening around this province and the country, I think.
Yeah, but Kerry, the best scenario, I mean the most likely scenario, not the best, the most likely scenario is an NDP government, right?
Possibly,
but let me just
say
this.
I think that's the most likely scenario.
Yeah, I think it's very possible, Terry. Yeah. I think you're right. But let me just say this. I think the voters, I think Kerry's right. I think there's a revolution that's going on worldwide, and it's a kind of an anti-government, pro-democracy thing, for lack of a better word, and it manifests itself a number of different ways, whether you're talking the Middle East or the United States or Australia or whatever. But we're seeing it here with the Fight HST, and if the people win that, they're going to feel very empowered and very powerful, and they're going to take their democracy back. And so it may mean somebody like John Cummins splits the vote with the Liberals and we end up with an NDP government for a time. But the great news is this. Unlike every other time that that has happened, we did not have initiative and referendum laws that could work. This time they will know that they work, and that no government, it won't matter who gets in next time, will ever be allowed to carry on the way they did in the past. Mm-hmm. They will have to respect the people, and they will have to abide by what they say they're going to do. And you notice the NDP, whenever they've been elected, they oppose, when they're in opposition, when they're running for government, they sound like they're a little more moderate and a little more to the right. And then they get in and they go crazy with all their social engineering and taxation.
Yeah. So
this time they won't be able to do that. If they promise to run a fiscally responsible, balanced budget and all the rest of that and then turn around and betray that, they will be defeated in a citizen referendum.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and they will know that. So they will never be allowed to do that again. So that's the good news.
Well, you know what? And the tools now for participating in our democracy have changed. People are organized and they can talk with one another. They don't need the old censored news of the mainstream media and those kinds of things for their information.
Yeah, I don't even call them the mainstream media anymore because they're not really mainstream. They're what I call the conventional media. That's how we've conventionally got our news. But there's so many millions of people now going into alternative media, or what was at one time called alternative media, that you really can't call the conventional media mainstream anymore.
Hey, Chris, it's all roadkill now, okay?
Yeah.
It's all about roadkill radio.
And, Chris, you were talking about initiative and referendum legislation to keep the government honest. You neglected to say that roadkill radio will be here to keep any NDP government honest as well.
Well, exactly.
If that's possible.
This is the whole point, and you've got all kinds of blogs and web sites that are doing that now, and people, as Gary said, are talking to each other.
Yes.
So the media doesn't own, they don't have a hegemony over the message anymore.
Right.
And even you see things like Sun TV coming about now. It's a very, very different perspective than what we've seen before.
And I'm proud to say that we here at Roadkill Radio have a far superior set to anything on Sun TV, despite their millions.
Yeah, they've struggled a little bit.
Yes. I don't know if you've seen our new set. If you're watching us live right now, Chris, over the last month, we have a spectacular new set here and a new background.
Oh, I'll have to log on here.
Before we go off. And anyway, so we have to say goodnight here because we're almost to the end of the show. So thank you very much, Chris, for joining us.
My pleasure.
And continued good luck. And I don't know where you and Bill get the energy, but you're obviously eating right.
Well,
we
can see the finish line now. We've been on it a long time. Both of us have got to get back to our businesses and start earning a living again. But it's been great. And it's a privilege to be able to serve the people of British Columbia in a meaningful way without having, you know, anything to gain by it other than just doing the right thing. So we feel good about that. And we encourage everybody to vote yes to extinguish the HST and take back their province, take back their democracy, and take back their money.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, folks.
And say hi to everybody from Roadkill Radio for us, okay?
Okay.
Good night.
And that's a wrap on another show, Carrie. We've done it again.
Yeah, you know, where does the time go by? I just, you know, like, what? You look at the clock and we're out of time.
It had wings.
Did it?
It flew.
It just flew.
That's right. So, next week?
Next week, Terry, Mark Hasiuk, I believe, is going to be co-hosting with you.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. Mark was a guest on our show a while ago, a fantastic columnist from Vancouver Courier, that's right. Yes,
yeah.
Right. Good. So,
and good show already in the workings there. You're going to have a well-respected author on and talking about the Supreme Court of Canada and their activities.
Excellent. I've got some ideas as well. So stay tuned next week. Come on back to Roadkill Radio. And that's it for this week. I'm Terry O'Neill.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye. And that's Carrie. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.